Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and the cattle, and over all the wild animals and all the creatures that crawl on the ground." God created man in his image. In the divine image, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, saying to them, "Be fertile and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and all the living things that move on the earth." God also said, "See, I give you every seed-bearing plant all over the earth and every tree that has seed-bearing fruit on it to be your food, and to all the animals of the land, all the birds of the air, and all the living creatures that crawl on the ground, I give all the green plants for food." And so it happened. God looked at everything he made, and he found it very good. Evening came, and morning followed, the sixth day. One of the most important contributions made by the Roman Catholic Church during the last 131 years has been the development of a strong Catholic social teaching. Based on sacred scripture, both Hebrew and Christian, several recent popes have articulated a passionate response to the various social issues that developed during the industrialized world of the late 19th, 20th, and now 21st centuries. The teachings have taken a variety of forms. Primarily, they have been have taken the form of what's called an encyclical letter. An encyclical letter is a formal papal presentation related to some particular teaching, intended to present the church's position regarding some issue of concern. Beginning with Pope Leo XIII in his encyclical letter Rerum Novarum, issued in 1891, addressed some of the problems that were emerging in the relationship between management and labor due to the great changes brought about by the industrialized age. Every pope thereafter would use his office to address pressing social concerns. A requirement of the Catholic faith is the obligation on the part of our church, as the people of God, to participate in shaping the moral character of society. It is a basic part of the mission we receive from Jesus Christ, who offers a vision of life revealed to us in sacred scripture and sacred tradition. To echo the teaching of the Second Vatican Council, Christ, the Word made flesh, and showing us the Father's love, also shows us what it truly means to be human. The core of Catholic moral and social teaching is respect for the dignity of every human being. That's why I began by reading from the book of Genesis. We are made in the image and likeness of God. Every human being is made in the image and likeness of God and has an inherent dignity. Because we are people of both faith and reason, it is appropriate and necessary for us to bring this essential truth about the dignity of life to the public square. The teachings in regard to social matters are put into effect in three different stages. First, the actual situation is examined. Then the situation is evaluated carefully in relationship to the teaching of the church. Then it's decided what canons should be done in order that the traditional norms may be adapted to the circumstances of time and place. These three steps can be expressed observe, judge, and act. Members of the church are reminded that in fulfilling their duties and pursuing their goals, that we must not allow our consciousness of responsibilities to grow cool or to neglect the order of more important goods. Justice requires a fundamental fairness between agreements between individuals and social groups. Such a perspective demands respect for the dignity of all persons. Matthew's Gospel, chapter 25, verses 31 through 46, we read when we were talking about death, judgment, and heaven and hell, talks about the way in which we are called to act. Jesus' ministry also, he tells them in John chapter 13, when he washes their feet, he says, "So I have done, you also must do." And those things are shown to us in the corporal works of mercy, that you should have, and the spiritual works of mercy. Those were distributed to you when we were talking about something else. I can't remember what it was. But the corporal works of mercy are to feed the hungry, to give drink to the thirsty, clothe the naked, visit the imprisoned, shelter the homeless, visit the sick, and bury the dead. Six of the seven come directly from that gospel passage in Matthew's gospel. The spiritual works of mercy are to admonish the sinner, okay, not to beat the person down, but to admonish the sinner, to instruct the ignorant. Ignorant meaning with the classical philosophical definition of the term ignorant, meaning not knowing. Okay, unfortunately, our society hears the term ignorant and they think stupid. That's not the definition of ignorant. The definition of ignorant is one who does not know. So to instruct the ignorant, to counsel the doubtful, to comfort the sorrowful, to bear wrongs patiently, to forgive injury, and to pray for the living and the dead. There are 10 principles that highlight the major themes from Catholic social teaching. 10 basic principles. First, we've already talked about the dignity of human life, dignity of the human person. Belief in the inherent dignity of the human person is the foundation for all Catholic social teaching. Tonight, you're getting, in 1 hour, what I used to teach high school students in an entire semester. The first thing I told them on the very first day, I told them, it's not going to bother me if you do not remember that Leo XIII wrote Rerum Novarum in 1891. Okay? Or that Pope John Paul II wrote Centesimus Annus in 1991. What I want you to remember is that all are made in the image and likeness of God. And the dignity of the human person is the foundation of all Catholic social teaching. Human life is sacred. The dignity of the human person is a starting point for a moral vision of society. This principle is grounded in the idea given to us from the book of Genesis that man and woman are made in the image and likeness of God. that we are the clearest reflection of God among us. Thus, we are the foundation, the cause, and the end of all social transactions. This principle, the dignity of the human person, must be applied to all systems, all methods, in the various situations of time and place. It's important that this teaching be understood and also passed on. It's important to recognize when we talk about the dignity of human life, we're speaking about from conception to natural death. It's very difficult for someone to say, oh, I respect human life, but I'm for capital punishment. No, you're not, then you don't respect human life. You can't talk out of both ends of your mouth. The difficulty we have is that, for instance, in the United States, the political parties that exist, one is anti-abortion, but pro-capital punishment. The other is pro-abortion and anti-capital punishment. Somewhere in the middle, we have to find where we are. And that's why it's important for us to recognize that the most basic building block of all Catholic social teaching is the dignity of human life. The United States bishops, will talk about this toward the end of our discussion today, issued many years ago, and they've revised it each year, or every 4 years, a document called Faithful Citizenship. Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship. It is a, if you print it off, a 38-page document. Okay? The basic building block, the dignity of human life. The basic building block, the dignity of human life. The bishops of Alabama, some years ago in 1990, Bishop Bolden and Archbishop Lipscomb issued a document, Make Justice Your Aim. Speaking, it's a pastoral letter on poverty in Alabama. Basic building block, the dignity of all human life. And so the second thing that we look at, the second building block, or the second principle of Catholic social teaching, is the common good. The common good. The human person is both sacred and social. Sacred and social. As Aristotle so wonderfully tells us, man is by nature social. We realize our dignity and our rights in relationship with one another in a community. We grow and achieve fulfillment in community. Human dignity can only be realized and protected in context of the relationships with the wider society. How we organize our society in economics, politics, law, policy directly affects the human dignity and the capacity of individuals to grow in community. The obligation we have to love our neighbor has an individual dimension, but it also requires a broader social commitment. Everyone has the responsibility to contribute to the good of the whole society. The good of the whole society, the common good. The third principle of Catholic social teaching is, you'll hear this often, it's called the preferential option for the poor. The preferential option for the poor. The moral test of any society is how it treats its most vulnerable members. The poor have the most urgent claim on the conscience of the nation. We're called to look at public policy decisions in terms of how they affect the vulnerable, how they affect the poor. The option for the poor is not an adversarial slogan that pits one group or class against another. Rather, it states that the deprivation and powerlessness of the poor wounds the entire community. An option for the poor is an essential part of society's effort to achieve the common good. A healthy community can only be achieved if its members give special attention to those with special needs, to those who are poor and those who are on the margins of society. The fourth principle of Catholic social teaching is rights and responsibilities. Responsibilities. A lot of I's in responsibilities. Unfortunately, many in our society today look at this fourth principle of Catholic social teaching, and they look at the first half. They say, we have rights. And they want to do away with the responsibility. They say, we have a right to a just wage. Yes, we do. But you also have a responsibility to do the work for that just wage. You have a right to health care. Yes. But you also have a responsibility to keep yourself healthy, to do what you can to be healthy. Human dignity can be protected and a healthy community can be achieved only if human rights are protected and those corresponding responsibilities are met. Every person, for instance, has a fundamental right to life, starting with food, shelter, clothing, employment, healthcare, education. Corresponding to these rights are duties and responsibilities to one another, to our families, to the larger society. The fifth principle of social teaching is the role of government and, this is where it gets interesting, subsidiarity. The state has a positive moral function. It is an instrument to promote human dignity, to protect human rights, to build the common good. All people have a right and a responsibility to participate in government so that government can achieve its proper goals. The principle of subsidiarity holds that the functions of government should be performed at the lowest level possible, as long as they can be performed adequately. When the needs in question cannot adequately be met at a lower level, then it is not only necessary but imperative that the higher levels of government intervene. But the other thing to recognize in this principle of subsidiarity is that the higher level of government can intervene, but it must at some point step back. For instance, we've seen this in Alabama. We've seen this at various times when the State Board of Education will come in and take over or administer. For instance, they've done this recently, or they did this, I know, about seven or eight years ago in Jefferson County. They came in and took over or administered the Jefferson County school system. because the local board was not doing their job adequately. And then what happened? After a period of time, the state government steps back. The State Board of Education said, "We're stepping back, you continue." That's what's important. What happens too often, though, is that the higher level of government steps in and never leaves. There has to be this concept of subsidiarity, that the functions of government should be performed at the lowest possible level, as long as they are performed adequately. Okay? Six. Economic justice. The economy is meant to serve the people. Novel idea. The people are not meant to serve the economy. All workers have a right to productive work, to decent, fair wages, and to safe working conditions. They also have a fundamental right to organize. People have a right to economic initiative and private property. But those rights also have limits. It goes back to preferential option for the poor. You cannot amass so much when others lack the basic necessities of life. Catholic social teaching opposes what are called collectivist and statist economic approaches. What we mean by that, the common terms we hear about it here are socialism, Marxism, communism, where everything is held by the state. But it also rejects the notion that a free market economy automatically produces justice. Competition and free markets are useful elements of society. However, there are many goods and needs that cannot be satisfied by the market system. The task of the state and all society is to intervene and make sure those needs are met when the market system does not meet them. Okay? Seven, as we heard in the book of Genesis, stewardship. Of God's creation. God has given us this creation to sustain us. But we also have to remember that this creation that God has given us is meant to sustain future generations. The goods of the earth are God's gifts to us. And they are intended by God for the benefit of everyone, not only our generation, but subsequent generations. There is what some might call a social mortgage that guides or should guide the use of the world's goods. And we have a responsibility to care for those goods as stewards, not as consumers. And so it's important for us to look and see how we take care of the environment. How are we stewards of creation? How are we stewards of creation? Eight, promotion of peace. promotion of peace. Catholic teaching promotes peace as a positive, action-oriented concept. In the words of Pope St. John Paul II, peace is not just the absence of war. It involves mutual respect and confidence between peoples and nations. It involves collaboration and binding agreements. Peace is the fruit of justice and is dependent upon right order among human beings. Number 9, participation. Sorry, as it goes down this list, it's harder and harder for me to write on the board, because I don't bend over well, or I don't squat down very well. All people have a right to participate in the economic, political, and cultural life of society. It is a fundamental demand of justice and a requirement for human dignity that all people be assured of a minimum level of participation in community. It is wrong for a person or a group to be excluded unfairly or to be unable to participate in society. Number 10, solidarity. We are one human family. Our responsibilities to each other cross national, racial, economic, and ideological differences. We're called to work globally. Authentic development must be full human development. We must avoid the extremists of underdevelopment on the one hand and superdevelopment on the other. Accumulating material goods and resources is unsatisfactory if there is no respect for the moral, cultural, and spiritual dimensions of the person. As we hear in sacred scripture, we can only build so many barns for surplus goods and wealth. There's an old Quaker proverb, rather than build more barns, build longer tables. And so these are the 10 basic guiding principles of Catholic social teaching. We could spend a night talking about each one of them. Like I said, you're getting a semester course in an hour. Please feel free to spend some more time reflecting upon them. You've heard me mention the encyclical letter written by Pope Leo XIII in 1891 called Rerum Novarum. Its English title, On the Condition of Labor. This seminal work on modern Catholic social thought addresses the plight of industrial workers in the wake of the Industrial Revolution. We have to remember it's written in 1891, the wake of the Industrial Revolution. It calls for the protection of the weak and the poor through the pursuit of justice, while excluding socialism. It affirms the dignity of work and the right to private property and the right to form and join professional associations. 40 years later, Pope Pius XI in 1931 writes an encyclical letter entitled Quadragesimo Anno, which just means in Latin, after 40 years. Quadragesimo is 40. Quadragesimo Anno, after 40 years. He, in commemorating the 40th anniversary of Rerum Novarum, he reaffirms the need for social order animated by justice and spends a lot of time speaking about subsidiarity.
When was that?
1931. The next is John XXIII. Pope John XXIII writes in 1961, Mater et Magistra, which is mother and teacher, the exact translation, mother and teacher. But the English title is Christianity and Social Progress. He reaffirms the church's role as a teacher and as a nurturing guardian, a mother for the poor and the oppressed. And he calls for a greater awareness of all people to live as one community. Special attention is focused on the plight of farmers and farm workers in depressed rural agricultural economies. John XXIII also writes in 1963, Pacem in Terris, peace on earth. He reaffirms the inviolability of human life, and spends time speaking about peace. Peace based on mutual trust can only be found if undergirded by a unity of order in human affairs, arising from a genuine respect and adherence to the law of God. Paul VI writes in the encyclical letter Populorum Progresso, also known as On the Development of Peoples, 1967, calls attention to the growing marginalization of the poor. In 1971, Paul VI also writes Octogesima Advienes, 80th year, 80 years after Rerum Novarum. He calls on Christians to live up to their duty of participation in social and political reform as a way of living out the gospel. He writes, in the face of such widely varying situations, it's difficult for us to utter a unified message and put forward a solution which has universal validity. Such is not our ambition, nor is it our mission. It is up to the Christian communities to analyze with objectivity the situation which is proper to their own country. I always like to add two other words to it. He says, it's up to the Christian communities to analyze with objectivity the situation which is proper to their own country, and I like to add, and community, to shed on it the light of the gospel's unalterable words and to draw principles of reflection, norms of judgment, and directives for action from the social teaching of the church. One thing to remember, this is not one size fits all. We have a tendency to think this is one size fits all. The joy of Pope Paul VI is that he tells us it's up to the Christian communities to analyze with objectivity the situation which is proper to their own country and their community. Observe, judge, act. We need to remember that this is not when our Holy Father speaks, when Pope Francis speaks, when Pope Leo XIII speaks, they're speaking to a universal church, a church that covers the entire world. It's up to us to take what they say, and disseminate it and massage it into our situation. Into our situation. Pope John Paul II writes in 1891 on human work. He presents work as a fundamental dimension of human existence. A fundamental dimension of human existence. Christ himself worked. Christ himself was the son of Joseph the carpenter. We hear in the Gospel of Matthew, when after discovering Jesus in the temple, they come back to Nazareth, where Jesus grows in wisdom, age, and knowledge. So he learns from his foster father, Joseph, and from his mother. Work is a fundamental dimension of human existence. Pope John Paul II wrote in 1991, Centissimus Annus, you see we have 40 years, 80 years, and now 100 years. The anniversary of Rerum Novarum. It was issued 100 years after Leo XIII's encyclical. It is written in the wake of communism's collapse in Eastern Europe. And it looks to the new things influencing social order. It examines strengths and weaknesses of various forms of capitalism and the free market. It picks up such themes as work, unions, wages, unemployment, profit, atheism, class struggle, freedom, and private property. He says the human person cannot be understood on the basis of economics alone, or defined simply on the basis of their class. It's a very, very good read if you have the opportunity, because he seeks to look forward after the fall of communism in Eastern Europe. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, as I mentioned, issued a document entitled Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship. The first printing was in 2007. It was then redone in 2011 and has been edited ever since. The basic principles remain the same in faithful citizenship. Is the bishop's guiding document for our participation in political life. Some question whether it is appropriate for the church to play a role in political life. The obligation to teach about moral values that should shape our lives, including our public lives, is central to the mission given to us by Jesus Christ. We believe, especially here in the United States, that our Constitution protects the right of individual believers and religious bodies to participate and speak out without governmental interference, favoritism, or discrimination. Our nation's tradition of pluralism is enhanced, not threatened, when people of faith bring their convictions and their concerns to public life. In the Catholic tradition, responsible citizenship is a virtue, and participation in political life is for us a moral obligation. It's rooted in our baptismal commitment to follow Jesus Christ and to bear witness to Christ in all that we do. The Catechism of the Catholic Church reminds us it is necessary that all participate, each according to his position and role, in promoting the common good. This obligation, the Catechism says, is inherent in the dignity of the human person. It continues by saying, as far as possible, citizens should take an active part in public life. It's important for us to recognize that we are meant to be guided by our moral conviction, not by our attachment to a particular party or interest group. We are guided by our moral conviction, not by our attachment to a particular political party. Consequently, in fulfilling our responsibility, the church itself should avoid endorsing or opposing candidates or telling people how to vote. The wonderful words of Pope Francis: the church is called to form consciences, not replace them. It is our responsibility as human beings to make our own decision. We have been given free will. It's up to us to make the decision. Gone are the days when the person walks up, "Father, just tell me what to do." I can't do that. I can give you options. You make the choice. The choice is yours, not mine. I can tell you what I would do or what I'm going to do, but what I'm going to do is different than what you're going to do because I'm formed and influenced by different things than you are. The church wishes to help form consciences, to help stimulate greater insight into the requirement of justice. One of the things to remember: the church can never replace the state. We tried that once. It didn't work. It happened in the Dark Ages after the fall of Rome. It is the church that holds the people together. The church begins to extend into governmental authority. We have the Holy Roman Empire. We have all these things going on. Thankfully, in 1890? Vatican I. Vatican I, 18, so Victor Emmanuel comes in 1870. Victor Emmanuel unites Italy. No longer are there papal states. No longer is the church involved in government. The church never should have been involved in government, but the church was the only thing holding the people together because there was no government. The church stepped in and unfortunately didn't do what it said it should have done here, step back out. Once you get power, you don't want to let it go. Okay? And we see the difficulty with that. We see the difficulty that went on for 1,000 years, from the Dark Ages until 1870. And so it's important for us to recognize that the church is not meant to replace the state. And yet, we must not remain on the sidelines. We must be willing to fight for justice. We must be willing to form our consciences in accord with Catholic social teaching. Catholic lay men and women should be actively involved in running for office, working within political parties, communicating their concerns and positions to elected officials, and joining organizations. A consistent ethic of life provides a moral framework for principled Catholic engagement in political life, and rightly understood, does not treat all issues as morally equivalent, and it should not reduce Catholic teaching to one or two issues. The Catholic approach to faithful citizenship rests on moral principles found in sacred scripture and Catholic moral and social teaching, as well in the hearts of all people of goodwill. The document Faithful Citizenship brings up seven key themes, and they are drawn from the 10 basic themes of Catholic social teaching. All they do is take a couple of these and group them together. The right to life, the dignity of the human person. It includes opposition to abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, the destruction of human embryos. It also calls upon us to oppose torture, unjust war, the death penalty, racism, to overcome poverty and suffering. The call to family community, the call to family, community, and participation. The protection of marriage and family is traditionally understood. The acknowledgement of basic rights and responsibilities. Option for the poor and the vulnerable. The dignity of work and the rights of others. Solidarity, caring for God's creation. And so, the document Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship is also something to look at, especially in the next few years as we prepare ourselves for another national election. There is something else that we need to address as we talk about Catholic social teaching. It is called the separation of church and state. The phrase separation of church and state is not found in the Constitution. Those words are not found in the Constitution. It is associated with the First Amendment. The First Amendment of the Constitution states, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. John Tracy Ellis, a Catholic Church historian, describes church and state like a railroad track. They run on different tracks, but they're parallel to each other. They need not be too close, or there'll be an accident, or too far apart, or they face isolation. The purpose of the First Amendment was not to silence the religious voice, but to free religion from state control so that moral and religious values and principles could be taught and cultivated in a wider society. The separation of church and state does not require division between belief and public action, between moral principles and political choices, but protects the rights of believers and religious groups to practice their faith and act on their values in public life. I'd like to conclude with something said by Pope John Paul II as he left the United States after his trip in 1987 to the United States, as he was leaving from the Detroit airport. He said, "As I go, I take with me vivid memories of a dynamic nation, a warm and welcoming people, a church abundantly blessed with a rich blend of cultural traditions. I depart with admiration for the ecumenical spirit that breathes strongly throughout this land, for the genuine enthusiasm of your young people, and for the hopeful aspirations of your most recent immigrants. I take with me an unforgettable memory of a country that God has richly blessed from the beginning until now. America the beautiful, so you sing in one of your national songs. Yes, America, you are beautiful indeed and blessed in so many ways. In your majestic mountains and fertile plains, in the goodness and sacrifice hidden in your teeming cities and expanding suburbs, in your genius for invention and splendid progress, in the power that you use for service, and in the wealth that you share with others, in what you give to your own, in what you do for others beyond your borders, in how you serve, and in how you keep alive the flame of hope in so many hearts, in your quest for excellence, and in your desire to right all wrongs. Yes, America, all this belongs to you. But your greatest beauty and your richest blessing is found in the human person, in each man, woman, and child, in every immigrant, in every native-born son and daughter. For this reason, America, your deepest identity and truest character as a nation is revealed in the position you take towards the human person. The ultimate test of your greatness in the way you treat every human being, but especially the weakest and the most defenseless ones. The best traditions of your land presume respect for those who cannot defend themselves. If you want equal justice for all and true freedom and lasting peace, then America, defend life. All the great causes that are yours today will have meaning only to the extent that you guarantee the right to life and protect the human person. Feeding the poor and welcoming refugees, reinforcing the social fabric of this nation, promoting the true advancement of women, securing the rights of minorities, pursuing disarmament while guaranteeing legitimate defense. All this will succeed only if respect for life and its protection by law is granted to every human being from conception until natural death. Every human person, no matter how vulnerable or helpless, no matter how young or how old, no matter how healthy, handicapped or sick, no matter how useful or productive for society, is a being of inestimable worth, created in the image and likeness of God. This is the dignity of America, the reason she exists, the condition for her survival, yes, the ultimate test of her greatness. To respect every human person, especially the weakest and the most defenseless ones, those as yet unborn. With these sentiments of love and hope for America, I now say goodbye in words that I spoke once before. Today, therefore, my final prayer is this: that God will bless America so that she may increasingly become and truly be and long remain one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May God bless you all. Questions? Like I said, it was difficult to cram a semester course into an hour, but we tried our best. I know it was a lot of information. Okay. But there is there's a lot of information out there about Catholic social teaching. Just remember, the church is not teaching socialism, communism, Marxism. Church is not teaching that capitalism in and of itself is the right way to go. Anything to the extreme is wrong. So it's important for us to recognize these basic principles, 10 basic principles of Catholic social teaching.